You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Wednesday, 9 June. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Houghton, Johannesburg. On the show today, we're chatting with Preston Aramsamy, the last healthcare update around the Alzheimer's drug and Q1 GDP. Results from Cygnia, and then talking about with Abrax investments, reducing downside risk in portfolio, even if that does limit some of the upside. Some morning headlines from MoneyWeb, an inside look at how MTI managed to prolong an extraordinary losing streak. It was losing money from the get-go. And it's an amazing read that we're getting access to how things were being run. This obviously as they go through the winding up of the business. And then Business Day, Woolworths may be eyeing standalone liquor retail as ripe for growth. Yes, no, maybe. This is a crowded space. I mean, everyone's moved there. Checkers, Pick and Pay, Spar. Certainly high margin, but I don't know. Do we need more liquor stores? Can Woolies really make a difference? Morning markets. US was green. S&P up less than a point, 0.02%. NASDAQ up a third of a percent. Asia's red with Sydney off 0.1 and Tokyo down 0.3. Commodities mostly green overnight. Gold, $1,897 an ounce. Rand, 1358. Top 40 opening call, green, but 50 points higher, which is a little under 0.1%.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Trading now with Preston Aramsamy, he's portfolio manager, Nedbank Private Wealth. Preston, morning, appreciate the early morning call. The life healthcare, we've almost played this dance before. There's the Alzheimer's drug out of the US. It gets announced that they're getting fast track approval from the FDA. Life was up, what, 15% at some point, only closed up around 2%. I mean, this might be a big deal, but my sense is it's a couple of years away still in the market. Got a bit ahead of itself.
Good morning, Simon, to you and your listeners. Totally agree with some of your sentiments there, Simon. There's still a lot of uncertainty here. Although there's probably a lot of upside longer term, who knows how long before that upside starts to materialize. So, you know, Simon, if you look at just the treatment, you know, it's very expensive. It's like $56,000 a year. Yeah. And there's a lot of unknowns here. You've got the likes of Roche, which is a multinational healthcare company, also looking into this. So, you know, Simon, a lot of uncertainty here. A market, you know, has got ahead of itself. We saw a few months back, you know, Simon, when this news came to the market, the share price was up 20% on the one day, and the next day it lost 20. So I think the market's just getting ahead of itself on this one.
Yeah, that was, I'm checking the chart, November. And in fact, as you say, it spiked to 24 Rand. And before we knew it, sort of by December, it was back at 15. The healthcare stocks generally, I'm looking at life. I mean, it's been a rough decade, but if we zoom in and sort of look at the last couple of months, we've seen results out. We've seen elective surgeries still not happening. We are seeing some movements on the charts. Love Healthcare a lot more, Mediclinic less so, Netcare less so. Is this a sector which you're looking at for potential investment, or a wait and see? Let's get the pandemic behind us.
Yeah, you know, Simon, it's actually a very interesting sector to look at from a valuation perspective. If you look at how our hospital, Simon, you know, you can pick them up, you know, each of these groups, any one of them at, you know, 11, 12 or 13 times PE. Mm-hmm. So they're quite cheap when compared to global peers, Simon. But the issue here is the timing of this value unlock. There's still a lot of uncertainty. You probably have to be very patient as an investor. You know, Simon, we've got third wave risks. We've got, you know, the vaccine rollout that's still a little bit of an issue. But I must say, Simon, you know, the outlook is improving. We've seen occupancies back to around the 60% level. You know, if you compare that to last year, Simon, we were probably half of that. And like you mentioned, Simon, we're not seeing those higher margin electives really, you know, recover all that much. But Simon, there is pent up demand, and that will unfold over the medium term. So for me, what's encouraging, Simon, is that these companies have cleaned up quite a bit. You know, they've sold a lot of their offshore investments. They've got some cash. They've conserved some cash. And, you know, overall, Simon, they've been able to delever quite nicely. I think Netcare is probably in the strongest position in terms of, their debt metrics. So, you know, Simon, you know, me, I like Netcare. I think it's quite cheap. They've got the strongest debt position. I think their occupancies are a little bit stronger than the other groups. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Simon, they're most likely to resume dividends toward the end of this year. So for me, Simon, still, you know, a little bit patient, but I'll be waiting for trading updates later in this year. So I think October, if I'm not mistaken, September, October later this year, we'll get another set of updates. And that will give us a little bit more clarity on where these companies are heading.
But I like your point around the pent-up demand. If I need knee surgery, I'm not doing it during a pandemic, but I'm going to need that knee surgery. We are going to see suddenly people beating a path to those hospitals when sort of normalcy returns. A quick last point, we had the GDP numbers out yesterday, quarter on quarter up 1.1%, but versus previous year down 3.2%. My sense is it was kind of Goldilocks. It wasn't horrid, it wasn't excellent. It kind of does indicate what's happening on the ground, mining and financial services, the big numbers in there.
Yeah, agreed, Simon. I think the market's not really paying all that attention to the data, Simon. I think markets are just on hold for the U.S. inflation data that comes out on Thursday. But for me, Simon, recovery is going on, you know, decently. I guess the sprint gave us a little bit of insight into the recovery within some of the sectors. I mean, mining, we know, Simon. But for me, what was, what I got from this was, some of the numbers on the financial industry and, you know, real estate were a little bit better than expected. And, Simon, we got some signals off this from the likes of First Rand. And, yesterday we had the Resilient REIT also come up with some numbers. And on the back of that, you know, banking counters were up here and they're a little bit mixed yesterday, but property had a good rally yesterday. Simon, for me, in summary, recovery is decent, some nice insight into the subsectors.
Yeah, there was a fairly good move in property yesterday. I mean, it's been a tough space forever, but I mean, it was still a decent move there. We'll leave it there. That's Preston Aramsamy, Portfolio Manager, Nedbank Private Wealth. Preston, appreciate the early morning, sir.
Business, finance, and investment news. MoneyWeb Now
with Simon Brown
on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Signia CEO David Houghton. They had results out for 6 months ending March. Assets under management and administration up 27.8%, partly boosted by markets, but also boosted by inflows. Diluted headline earnings per share at 72.8 cents and a dividend, interim dividend, 55 cents versus 40 cents a year ago. David, appreciate the early morning time. We saw strong flows into retail deposits. You signed up significant new retail customers. Where was that flows going? Was it going into sort of the safer money markets? Was it going into equities or into your sort of FANG and fourth industrial revolution products?
Morning, Simon. Yes, we experienced some really great flows overall in the business, just shy of 4 billion rand. But retail in particular was flourishing over the last 6 months. Where the flows went, I mean, we attracted a lot of business into our skeleton balance range of unit trusts. Mm-hmm. Those are the passively managed funds, certainly into our fourth industrial revolution unit trust, as well as its ETF counterparts. And some money did flow into our money market fund. If you recall, we did offer a free management fee option into our money market fund, as well as our all bond fund. So we have seen good flows into those funds. But I think it's our tech funds and our passively managed skeleton range of unit trusts that has predominantly attracted those really good flows. Over 5 billion rand into retail in the last 6 months.
It's a giant number, and not to tell the retailers where to put their money, but it's great to see it going into equity. Often we see sort of fear driving it in other places. And one of the key points you mentioned there, I mean, this is passive money. I mean, if we had chatted a decade ago, we would have mentioned passive, but it would have been tiny. I mean, your flows in this 6 months is probably about as big as the passive market was a decade ago. It has been a fundamental shift over the last 10 years.
Quite right. I mean, although that said, passive remains small in South Africa.
Sure.
It's in its infancy. It probably makes up half of the U.S. Industry at the moment, a rising force in other developed markets. But I think retail investors as well as institutional investors are turning towards passive. They're turning to lower cost index tracking options. They're choosing to marry the best aspects of passive and active strategies. So we're seeing the market turn. I mean, investors are becoming far more fee sensitive, particularly in a low return environment. So passive is on the up.
Yeah, I love that point. If your returns are lower, and that's, you know, if our inflation is lower, returns are lower, fees need to be lower. You did comment that you'd seen a fair amount of employers suspending or reducing retirement contributions. That's obviously, you know, this is the period we were out of hard lockdown, but people were losing income, people were losing jobs. Has that started to reverse since year end? Are sort of the monthly contributions into retirement funds back to normal sort of levels?
It has started to abate. As you point out, you know, particularly in our institutional business, in our umbrella fund space, we did notice two particular COVID-related matters. And that was firstly, you got your financially distressed employers that were either suspending or reducing their contributions to the funds they sponsor. And then secondly, we'd seen a markedly increase in retrenchments year on year.
Mm-hmm.
In our umbrella fund, where we have line of sight through to the nature of the exits or benefit payments, because we are the liability administrator in the umbrella fund, for the 12 months to the end of March, we had seen that 44% of all withdrawing members were due to retrenchment. Over the last 6 months, that's reduced to 26%, and I think that trend is continuing towards kind of pre-pandemic levels. On employers having reduced contributions, we saw 36% of our employees in our umbrella fund during the course of the last 12 months having reduced or suspended contributions. That's now down to 2% at the end of March.
Okay, so I mean that's sort of, I suppose, back to some normal. Quick last point. You mentioned again that, you know, I know a couple of years ago Cigna tried to get a crypto ETF. You tried again, being declined by the JSE. The JSE is basically saying there isn't sort of the structures in place to it. I mean, are there other options here? And OTC, I know you're putting together a new platform, or is it a case of you're going to wait for the JSE to be able to facilitate?
Simon, we applied back in 2017. We were eventually declined literally at the 11th hour for an ETF listing on the JSE somewhere in 2018. We attempted it again 2 weeks ago. We submitted an application and were turned down again on the basis of there being no national framework to support the regulation of digital assets. We will keep trying, and quite right, we do have some other thoughts in mind that we are exploring, separate from an ETF. There are feeder funds one can consider. There are funds of funds that one could consider. So we're looking at various options.
We'll leave it there. There's some options coming through. We'll leave it there. David Houghton, CEO, Cigna Asset Management, talking their results to end March. As David said there, they tried again to list the crypto ETF. Our question to you on our social media, LinkedIn, Facebook, and Twitter, do we need a listed crypto ETF? Yes, you want. Maybe you're buying direct, or perhaps no interest in cryptos.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Checking in with Omri Thomas, our portfolio manager at the Amplify SCI Flexible Equity Fund and director at BAX Investments. Omri, appreciate the early morning time. A great note that hit my inbox earlier this week, and talking around sort of how you manage a fund, and particularly when things get a little bit wild, which what 2020 absolutely was, and sticking to that philosophy. And one of the things that you and your team look at is almost in a sense of trying to limit those losses, which might take some of the shine off the upside, but it's an emotional response how we as individuals really sort of, losses are a lot more painful than the joy of a gain. So it actually works to our sort of our emotional benefit as much as financial.
Good morning, Simon, and thanks for the opportunity. Yes, you're absolutely right. I mean, our feelings are asymmetric, so our joy is not as great as our pain when we take a loss. So the philosophy of the fund is to mimic that. We try and get asymmetric returns where we try and limit the downside participation, but try and participate in some of the upside. But for that downside protection, you pay away a bit of the upside. But we think over time, your end result is a return that's consistent with what the market's delivering, but at a slightly lower risk. And so that's the aim of the fund. that we're trying to achieve.
Yeah, and less pain in it. And, you know, we know the math. 60% down needs 150% up to get back to where you started. And it's emotionally hard. You're also fairly, I mean, one of the things I noticed, you're fairly aggressive. You're quite happy to, you know, you look at assets and you will take exposure to zero. You're not going to feel compelled to sort of have a stake in almost a FOMO sense. If you think there's value lacking, you're going to say, thanks, but actually, no, we're not interested. And currently, you're quite weighted on SA equities. I mean, certainly you're seeing value there as you sit at around 50% into South African equities.
Yeah, Simon, it's a good observation. We've got very strong fundamental valuations on asset classes and on securities. And if we don't see value in an asset class, we don't just hold it for the case of missing out, especially in momentum stocks and sectors where valuations are high. At the moment, if we look at global assets, developed market assets are a lot more pricey than South African assets, mm-hmm. which have lagged. And we find quite a few opportunities in South Africa. If you look at the South African market, we've really had a commodity run the last year or two. And the rest of the market has lagged. And what we've seen is that local economic growth and GDP has actually surprised on the upside. Mm-hmm. So businesses and the economy is doing better than what was expected, and it's starting to reflect in companies' earnings. And share prices have reacted, but we think there's still a way to go there.
Yeah, and I mean, looking at some of your big holding, Naspers, Royal Buffalo King, but you also, I mean, there's certainly some exposure to banks, some Standard Bank, some First Rand, and Baldwin. Baldwin's a little stock, which is really interesting. And they're in the housing market. And I've been listening to what's happening in the U.S. And even in South Africa, we're seeing that demand coming. And there's some beaten down smaller stocks that, if you take a couple of year view out, really are offering some potential great value.
Simon, I think that, I mean, the small caps of today are the large caps of tomorrow. And in the small cap space, you can find stocks that are trading at single-digit P's with decent dividend yields. When you refer to Baldwin, I'm on one of the best land banks in South Africa in most provinces, trading at a single-digit P, paying a dividend, and playing in that sweet spot, the entry-level quality home market. And I think there are a few examples like that. So we are a bit spoiled for choice at the moment in terms of opportunities in the South African market.
Yeah, and it is that sweet spot, sort of that 1 million to little under 2 million, which is weird when we say there's a sweet spot, but there's a lot of activity happening there. Omri Thomas, appreciate the time. Director of X Investments. That's it for today. On our social media yesterday, we were asking you around coal. We were talking about Pangula Resources. Viv Govender said, you know, hang on a sec. Everyone hates it, and that might create some opportunity there. You know, it's trading at about 3x its EBITDA. So we asked if you think there's an investment case there. Just over half of you say, yep, absolutely worth a look. And then a chunk. I mean, let's be clear. About 40-odd% are, nope, it's a short. They're not interested. And there was that article out over the weekend saying this thing is worth zero rand because of the risks in terms of rehabilitation of the mines. Remember, you can vote on our polls, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Facebook. That's it. We are live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast available from 7 a.m. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Cordora, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.